to a brand new episode of Sincerely Jennifer with me, Jennifer Wan. Hello. Hi. I'm back again for the second episode this week, because obviously one came out on Friday, but this is like a proper episode. Obviously that was like a bonus episode anyway. Oh my god, let's do it. Let's celebrate being alive through the medium of audio and the audio of medium volume. And anyways, sorry, I'm in the middle of recording and I've just got a notification to say that Prince Harry and Meghan, the Duchess of Sussex, they've had a baby. I completely forgot that Meghan was pregnant, to be honest. But they've had a baby. They've called her Lilibet Diana Mountbatten Windsor. Obviously, Diana is Harry's mum's name. And I'm reliably informed from my watching of The Crown that Lilibet was Queen Elizabeth's nickname as a child, or something. So, congratulations to the only members of the royal family that I respect. Well done! Red and Black Wine Gums, a movie about the Warrens. My fragile heart in your arms with the rest of me as the night goes on. We watch ghosts that don't have a grip on us, finally feeling free of the past and our paranoia. I miss you when the lights go down, turning to your shadow, watching it fill out until I can see you in full again. I'm captured by how your eyes glitter in the dark. And I kiss you like I have no regrets. And no walls surrounding me. You taste like red and black wine gums. And the movie goes on as you move closer to me. The boundaries of our seat broken, the holes inside my heart fixed. So, the lockdown has loosened a little bit here in England. Some are happy about that, some are not. There is a lot of debate right now as to whether it's going to continue with restrictions being eased over the next few weeks, but I'll get into that a bit later because I'm going to talk about that later on. But the key point I want to talk about right now is that I can go to the cinema. A couple of episodes ago, I think I talked about how I went to go and see Spiral at the cinema and I had a really good time. Last week I saw A Quiet Place and A Quiet Place Part 2. They were showing both of them on the same day. I'd never been to the cinema to see two films at once. So that was exciting. I felt very fancy. We got to have a little break in between, which is when I finished off this poem that I just read. But I started it on, I think it was the Wednesday. Yeah, it was the Wednesday. Because I went to see the new Conjuring film. Which in my opinion has a ridiculously long title. They should have just called it The Conjuring 3, if I'm honest. But, I mean, I had a good time watching it anyway, so that's just like a minor issue that I have. I'll be honest, I was really just there because, like, A, I wanted to get spooked out, and B, I wanted to stare at Patrick Wilson. And I got both of the things I went for, so... You know, so what if the title was a bit ridiculous? but I wrote, I started writing that poem. I got the idea because I had red and black wine gums. Because you can buy, right, in the shops. I'm about to blow your mind. You can buy, I'm not. You can buy wine gums, but just the red and black ones. Did you know this? I didn't know this until like the other day, and I saw them and I was like, oh, but I love those colors, let me get those. So I had those because I was like, I'm not really feeling popcorn today, so let me get me some wine gums. So I did, and I got a little Drinkington, and so I'm sat there with my wine gums, and I just had the line about wine gums and everything in my head, and I was like, oh, I gotta write this down. Oh, but I'm watching the film. Ah, I gotta write this down. So I get my phone out, I turn down the brightness real low so it's not interrupting anybody else, and I sort of start, you know, writing little bits and pieces. And then I thought, okay, I'm drawing a blank for the next line, so I'm gonna put it down, I'll come back to it. So I ended up finishing it during the break that we had, because we had like a little 20 minute break between A Quiet Place and A Quiet Place Part 2. So I finished that off, and I was kind of writing about going on a date to the cinema, because I have not done that in a while. Well, not with, you know, not in the presence of red and black wine gums anyway. So because most of the time I go to the cinema on my own, and so I was just like, let me write a little fanciful thing. You know, I'm sat here and I'm watching this film about all these ghosts and these ghost hunters and things and demons and things, and we got these wine gums and we're sharing these wine gums, and maybe we're gonna kiss, I don't know, what do you think? Just kind of a little post-lockdown romance, you know, because I feel like it's time. That's my Pridemas wish. And so I hope that like Santa Pride is listening. I've been a very good girl for the most part, as long as you're talking to the right people. So, you know, I feel like I'm ready to have a wish granted. Thank you. I take a bath, candles and Barry Manilow, drinking myself to death and then throwing a tantrum when I wake up alive again, never drowning despite being unable to swim, just clinging to life, surrounded by portraits of pain and horrified hearts. I'm kept up all night by all the lives that I've lived and how little sense they made, when they were no longer moments, just memories that play and give me pause. I hold no affection for all the women and girls that I've been, and no real love for the flames that lit the way, the famous paramours behind the pages, just shadows and scars that are stained no matter how much I scrub and plead and burn and bleed. I have never successfully won the love of anyone I liked. My hems are lined with the hearts I cast aside, and I can't abide looking at them, with their eyes full of sorrow, resigned like mine when I look at the portraits of pain, the faces of my ill-fated adventures, enchanting me like a seduced snake or a dancing bear until I am whatever they want. And even then, they never want me. Throughout the second lockdown, I was working my way back through Boston Legal. When I was younger, I started watching Boston Legal because William Shatner was in it, and I love William Shatner and I think he's great. And I just fell in love with the show and I thought it was really great. And I hadn't watched it for a very, 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 very long time. But then I was romantically linked to a lawyer for a time last year and a bit of this year. And so I started rewatching Boston Legal because, I don't know, I missed him. And because obviously lockdown happened, I couldn't see him. And I don't know, watching Boston Legal made me feel better, even though I knew that obviously that's a show set in America and it's very different kinds of like lawyer business things to what he was doing. But I don't know, it just kind of made me feel better. Obviously now that's done, but it's still a fucking great show. So I'm on the fifth season now. I'm almost at the end of my little rewatch. Bought them all on the iTunes, so that would be helpful because then I don't have to, you know, search through all my cupboards for the DVDs that I did have of them and then try and fucking make my DVD player work. It's very temperamental. That's why I mainly just like watch things on you know, my computer or my phone, like streaming Netflix, whatever. Anyways, so I've been watching Boston Legal a lot. And there was an episode where they used this song and it felt really familiar to me and I knew that I knew it, but I didn't know where I knew it from and I couldn't remember who it was. So I Shazammed it and that song was... It was by Barry Manilow and it was Trying to Get the Feeling Again. And so I quickly downloaded it on Apple Music. So I knew I'd heard it somewhere. It must have been a long time ago in another life maybe. And I listened to it again and again. And I just thought, I feel like this is the greatest song that has ever been written. So then I'll be honest with you, I just listened to fucking loads of Barry Manilow. I can't believe that I have neglected this man for so long. I can't believe that I mean, it's like that episode of Glee where Sam, like, goes into school and he's like, yeah, I like Barry Manilow now. I'm a Barry Fanilow. Like, that has been my life this week. I've become, like, a full-time Barry Manilow stan. I'm gonna be, like, in the crowd fighting all of his, you know, middle-aged lady fans and being like, hi, Barry Manilow. I really respect you as a songwriter and I'm happy for you and your husband. Love you, King. Like, that's gonna be me. Once lockdown's over and concerts start again, that's going to be me. But but yes, I've been listening to a lot of Barry Manilow, but particularly that song because it was just it's such a beautiful song, you know? And so I was just thinking about those moments in life when you really want something to work and you want to be happy, but you just know that it's not working. And I really admired the fact that he was like going to the doctor like, hey bro, can you make me love this person again? Because I don't want to hurt them. And I just want to make them happy. Like, I think that's nice. You know, it's better than, like, you know, cheating on someone or, like, being a dick about it. Like, he was actually trying, and I fucking respect that. He was like, listen, I don't know if this is something medicine can do, but help a brother out. You know what I mean? I thought that was great. I thought that was fabulous. So I was like, I started writing this thing about, you know, just kind of like being in the bath, thinking about the times when things weren't going great, and I was trying to make other people happy. I was trying to be as cruelty-free as all my fave makeup brands, and it's not a simple process. But sometimes I think you have to give it a go. And if you can't do that, you have to at least be honest with the person. And maybe I don't know that much about Barry Manilow, but I feel like he would be honest with the person. And he would say, look, I tried, I went to the doctor, I've written this song, I had a bath, I'm sorry, this isn't going to work anymore. I feel like he would tell someone the truth. He wouldn't just like be shady about it. And that is yet another reason to be a Barry Manilow, if we're honest. Spiteful siren, jealous of the waves that wash over you, my sweet, out-of-reach love. There's nothing else to do but to retire to my rock, sing sad things about my broken heart and hope you'll notice so I don't have to be brutally honest. My eyes are brown, my tail is blue, but my soul is green, and I see you through a fever dream where everyone is out to get you. I've always wanted you, admiring you as the sun rises and falls, and I fall like a lovesick lady of the land, but you never understand, my sweet out-of-reach love. You're never under my command, never moved by my melancholy melodies, never wooed by the promise of every sailor's fantasy. Spiteful siren, throwing pebbles at the pretty girls that crowd around you, staring at you, shirtless, famous, thoughtless. Of course, I bring the tide in with my tears every time you pass me by without a glance, without a gaze. And my days are so disjointed without you to tie them together. Hi, I'm a jealous, salty, mean mermaid. And I'm just like throwing rocks at people and shit. No. I had a dream that I was a mermaid, which happens to me quite often. Which of course is hilarious because I can't swim, as we know. But I do connect very much with mermaids, and I feel like if I weren't a human, I would be a mermaid, probably. And I feel very connected to the water, obviously, like Samara Morgan. But I would love that for me, because that would mean that Brian Cox would have to adopt me, and that would be fucking great. I would love that for me. I mean, sure, you know, I get thrown down a well, I become very vengeful, but I also get really cool, like, powers and shit. This should have been my life. Oh. I mean, yeah, I have to live in a barn as well, and the horses, but I feel like there are upsides. Anyway, sorry, I'm rambling. So I had this dream about being a mermaid, and I was a very mean mermaid. I was like one of the mermaids in Peter Pan. I was throwing shit at people, being mean, giving everybody dirty looks and shit. Because I feel like mermaids, more than anyone, probably have a lot of, like, I want the one I can't have and it's driving me mad. It's written all over my face. And the water of the sea never washes it away because the sea is, like, mean to me, you know? Because, like, they're just, like, hanging out in the sea looking at everybody else. I mean, yeah, they could, like, date a mermaid person or whatever, but, like, I don't know. I feel like all the humans would seem quite alluring because it's, like, something out of your world and it's like different, and so you kind of feel more attracted to it. I feel like it must suck, you know, to be a mermaid, because you'd be like looking at everyone like, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god, but also like really pissed because like everyone keeps polluting the place that you live. But so in this dream I'm this mermaid and I just felt really neglected, because in this dream I knew that there was someone that I loved and they weren't paying attention to me, which is basically a hate crime, especially as I was a mermaid. So it's like, I'm a minority, bitch, you should be making provisions for me. Which is funny because like I'm various types of minority on the land and no one does that either, so I don't know. And so, you know, I was very sad. I was a very sad mermaid. I was depressed. I was a hashtag depressed diva, but like in the water and things. It's like I'm singing to this person and they're far away and they won't look at me, and I'm like, hey bitch, what the fuck? Like, get over here and be in love with me. What is your deal? What are you doing? I'm a fucking mermaid. Like, everyone loves mermaids. It's like a whole thing. You bitches dress as us for Halloween. There was like a whole movie about how humans love mermaids. They're remaking it with that pretty girl from that group. Like, come on, man. It's fucked up. It's fucked up. What you're doing right now is fucked up. I was mad as hell. I woke up the next day and I still felt like angry. And then, you know, I had this sort of slow realization of, you're a human, you're not a mermaid, you're not in the water, you're in a bed for people on the planet Earth, on the land, you're not a mermaid, calm down, you mustn't be angry, you've got things to do today. So it's fun. Sometimes it takes me a while to like come out of my dreams because they're really real. Like, they're really realistic, and so it takes me a minute, but I get there. So I got to be a little mermaid for a bit this week. When I was a kid, The Little Mermaid was one of my favorite films, and I'm telling this story publicly before my mum can, because I know that she will, because she tells everybody that knows me that she meets about this. Okay, so here's the story. When I was a kid, I wasn't the best at talking, and I found the English language a bit of a fucking challenge. And so I used to pronounce mermaid as merminade. And this was before DVDs, right? So I used to call videos vididos, because she's challenged linguistically, okay? So I used to say, you know, I want to watch The Little Mermaid, can I have the video or whatever when I wanted to watch it? And she found that fucking hilarious, and she still does. So I'm just telling this story because if I tell it, it's not embarrassing. Because like, if anyone makes fun of me, I'm just gonna be like, oh, you're mocking a child, are you? What kind of person are you? But yeah, so she used to put it on for me
sometimes at night, and I would fall asleep. And she had to fast forward it to get to like the part where I fell asleep, so it took me a while to like watch the whole film. When she used to put it on, I'd watch it over consecutive nights. But I've always felt very much like a mermaid, and I got to live my mermaid fantasy in my dreams this week, so that was exciting and fun for me. I just hope the next time I'm not worried about some stupid like romance issue, and I just enjoy like being a mermaid and like swimming around and like saving the ocean and kicking the shit out of humans for polluting it all the time and killing sharks and things. And we'll swim, because I imagine when you swim and you're a mermaid you can get places faster with the ocean, I don't know. So we'll swim to America, okay? I'll get a gang. We'll get some sharks, we'll get some dolphins, we'll get some whales, we'll get some like different fish and things, we'll get an octopus, just to have one. I just feel like it'd be useful. And we'll swim to fucking America, okay? We'll find one of those sanctuaries where they put like retired animals, okay? And we'll go up to them, and because I'll be able to speak, you know, a human language, I'll be like, hey, hold some spots for me. We're going to be right back. Then we're going to go to SeaWorld and we're going to get the whales. Okay. And I'm going to use my mermaid powers to convince some of the humans to take those whales to the sanctuary, because they are not the hell SeaWorld's whales. We take the whales to the sanctuary, because unfortunately you can't just like put them back in the ocean, because their immune systems aren't going to be great. They're not going to know how to hunt and look after themselves. So we take them to the sanctuary so they don't have to perform and be stared at anymore, and they can just live out the rest of their lives being happy and having a good time. And it'll be fucking fabulous. That's what I'm going to do in my next mermaid dream. I cried as the cursed summer raged on, my mind long gone, whistling and walking like Simon Templar, wandering like a mad woman, slipping in and out of consciousness as the sun sent me love letters every morning. The sun was my only reliable caller. The same time every day, the same smiling beams across my window, some sentimental saga every morning, just to keep me distracted from how tempting the ledge looked and all the beauty that losing my balance offered. I went to waste in the park, made up like a beauty queen. New dress, same old excuse from my suitor who never showed up. Vast trails of mascara and eyeliner painted a picture of sorrow and solitude down my face, and I went to waste holding hands with a statue that somehow had more warmth than my lover. I would wait for the sun, suddenly unafraid of the dark, because nothing lurking in the shadows could wound me when I was already dead. So I sang to myself all night, pretending that the tears were just theatrics, and I waited for the sun, which rose eventually just like he promised. I lost my glamour in the morning light, just a tired girl in a disheveled dress with messed up makeup and twigs in her hair. But the sun still stayed, surrounding me, kissing my skin as if I was the most beautiful girl he'd ever seen. One of the other things that I've been doing to keep myself busy over this second lockdown, although really, actually, thinking about it, where I am in the southeast, it kind of feels like a third one, maybe? I don't know, because Although maybe it was just the second one was so long, it feels like more. I don't know. Anyways, I have been listening to the radio versions of The Saint, starring Hollywood's brilliant and talented actor Vincent Price, as they say in the intro to every show. Because when I was a very, very young girl, I used to listen to them with my granddad. We used to listen to lots of different radio programs because he had listened to them himself when he was younger, and so he would show them to me and we would listen to them together. And I don't know, I just suddenly thought about them a couple of weeks ago, and I thought, let me go and see if I can, you know, find them anywhere online. And to my joy and my happiness and surprise, there was a whole bunch of episodes of The Saint on Apple Music. So I was like, yes, I love this for me. So I downloaded them straight away and I started listening to them. And it was great because it felt very nostalgic. You know, I'm back, you know, sitting with my granddad, listening to these radio shows, not care in the world, everything's all good. The only thing I have to worry about is my maths test on Monday. You know, I could forget that there was a pandemic. I could forget that I was several decades older. You know, and I could just forget everything and just go back to that time when everything was a lot easier and a lot simpler. And do you know what? The intro always kind of creeped me out, but was really nice as well, because like has this little bit where he's walking and he's whistling, and then it goes into this beautiful orchestral theme song and everything. But anyway, so I've been listening to a lot of those recently. It's really kind of just helped cheer me up, keep my spirits up and all that. I'm actually seeing my grandparents next week, and I'm really excited. I can't wait. It's gonna be very, very exciting. But that poem actually was not about any of that, really. Although I did slightly reference Simon Templar, who was the main character in The Saint. It's actually about last sort of spring, summer, when obviously it was the first lockdown and things were really difficult. My relationship was kind of falling to pieces, and I was still kind of like, but this could be okay. We can still fix this. We can work it out. It's all gonna be fucking fine. You know, and you know, we'd, because obviously we couldn't see each other, but we would, you know, say, you know, we're gonna talk at this point, and you know, I'd make plans, and it just never came to fruition. And you know, it's like you keep trying, because you still love them, even though as the days go by they are making it clear that they don't love you anymore, because they disregard that. But you keep going and you keep trying because you want to make it work. And it was about this one particular day. You know, he says, I'm gonna call you tonight and we can catch up properly, talk. So I'm like, okay. Waited all day, nothing. I'm thinking, it's okay, it's all gonna be fine. So I got all dressed up for some reason, which is fucking ridiculous because it was gonna be a phone call, so no one was gonna fucking see me, but I don't know, I just did, you know, did my hair nice, did my makeup, wore this new dress I'd bought. I thought, I can't sit in this house all night because I'm going to drive myself mental. So go for a little walk, go to shops, go to the park for a bit, and then by the time I get home, it'll probably ring and everything will be fine. they didn't. And I think that was the point where there was sort of this part of me that was like, there is something wrong here. And I know that you don't want to see it and you don't want to acknowledge that there is something wrong, but there is. But obviously the rest of me was like, no, everything is going to be absolutely fine. You know, nothing has changed in this relationship. You know, there is nobody getting in the way of this. It's all going to be fine. But that little part of me that knew sort of took over, and I was sat in the park, thankfully on my own, because it would have been really embarrassing if someone wandered around, just crying, like hysterically crying in the park, just thinking, I want to fix this, but I don't think I can. I want to make everything the way it was before, but I don't think that I can. And I can't accept that this is happening right now when I really don't need it to. I thought that this was the one aspect of my life I didn't have to worry about. And as it all turns out, it's the only thing I need to worry about, because everything else will work itself out. But this, I can't fix this. I can't make it better, because this is out of my control. Because I knew, if I mean, I wasn't being honest with myself, I was being delusional, but there was a small part of me that knew, you are not alone in this. Just because this person is telling you that you are, that doesn't make it true. You are being lied to. There is someone being dishonest here. And if you're honest with yourself, you know that. But I wasn't listening to it. I was pretending it wasn't happening. And that night, it just kind of hit me. And I was like, he's not making time for you because he's making time for somebody else. And he will keep you hanging around because he knows that you'll do it. He knows that you will ignore how obvious it is that he is clearly unfaithful to you. And he knows that you'll ignore that because you don't want any conflict. You don't want to fight. You don't want to argue. You just want to pretend that everything is going to be just fine. It's all going to be how it was before. When all this pandemic nonsense is over, it's all going to be fine. You'll go back to normal. You know, so he doesn't even try and hide it. You've seen, but you pretended that you didn't. Because when he lies to you, you accept it because it's what you want to hear. And that night I had no choice but to just say, okay, yeah, this is happening. Did I do anything about it? No. I just cried a lot. But I accepted it, I suppose. Begrudgingly. Didn't do anything about it for several weeks, but I finally accepted that it was happening. And it was not a fun time.
Is going on with this whole politics business?
Hello, my name's Greg Knight. I'm a conservative. toast. Porridge.
Recording.
You just can't call it.
We're playing games.
Well, what I think
you're
people want
games.
Us to do is...
Frankly, Russia should go away. It should shut up.
So, Nigel Farage, I guess his career has taken an unexpected turn. At the moment, he's not leading a political party, I think. I know he was leader of the Brexit Party, and then they became the Reform Party, who are apparently campaigning on electoral reform, but then he decided he couldn't be asked to be the leader of that, so he stopped or whatever. And now his job kind of seems to be like full-time doing videos on Cameo and hanging out at Dover so that he can film boats or something. Anyways, so he did a cameo for someone this week and they asked him to say, do you know what? I'm gonna try and get the video. Hang on. I gotta find it again on my other phone. Because I can't play it on this one while I'm recording, obviously, because it would just be a disaster. Right, here we go. Right, let me tell you. This was high cringe content. I don't know how I feel about people like paying people like Farage to do cringe things on Cameo, because I get it, yeah, it's funny to watch them make a fool of themselves, but you're basically giving this man money because he still gets his money at the end of the day. Anyways, this is the video.
I know you don't know Mandem like that. More life, my driller. So peace out, though rah safe, and get back to me on the Brodom Selector. Big up, da bellum massive. I know.
Oh, mate. Oh, mate, it was cursed content, really. But yeah, it was very cringe, obviously. However, like I said, you know, sending Cameo requests for like memes or getting him to say stupid shit still means that he gets money. So, I don't know, it's a bit of an ethical conundrum, I guess. There was a decision made by the High Court about the Napier Barracks, which the Home Office was using to house migrants in Folkestone, here in Kent. So six asylum seekers brought the case, and they claimed that the barracks was unsafe, and that the fact that it was unsafe and it was overcrowded had caused a COVID-19 outbreak. I'll be honest, I feel like that was clear to anybody that had seen pictures and videos which were all over social media that showed how cramped the conditions were, how run down it was. It was clearly not a suitable place to house vulnerable people, but the Home Office did it anyway. And the High Court agreed with the asylum seekers and said that that it was unlawful for them to be housed there. The Home Office said that they would continue using the barracks for now and were considering its next steps, but this judgment could lead to more cases where people who have been housed there go through the courts to try and get something done. The judge said, I do not accept that the accommodation there ensured a standard of living which was adequate for the health of the claimants. Same, bro. Fucking same. I just feel like the Home Office will do the bare minimum and then complain when they get called out for it. It's exhausting to me, honestly. Because
Everybody that was housed in that barracks was vulnerable. And they were basically abandoned during a COVID-19 outbreak. They were able to get a message out, the people that were housed there, and they said that they didn't have space to self-isolate. People who were testing positive didn't have any space so that they could stay away from other people. So, of course, it spread, you know, and there was nothing anybody who was housed there could do. Which is just, I mean, it's inhumane. Like, of course it is. But the Home Office will just carry on and they'll be like, well, we don't agree with that assessment. And I'm like, well, that's probably because you're run by sociopaths. But okay. I really hope that because of this judgment, I hope that people are able to get compensation. I hope that it does make changes in terms of suitable housing being found, but knowing the Home Office, I doubt it will. So that's depressing. Boris Johnson, an absolute fucking clown. He got ratioed on Twitter this week, or at least his office did. So the 10 Downing Street Twitter account posted a tweet. There's a picture of Boris with a bunch of paramedics outside Downing Street. It said, yesterday, Prime Minister Boris Johnson welcomed paramedics to Downing Street to thank them for their work in responding to the pandemic over the last year. And people dragged him, as he deserves. There are a lot of questions about why these people couldn't be thanked by giving them a fair pay rise, which I feel is a valid question. I mean, you know, sure, they get to meet the Prime Minister, but what else? What else, you know? But it was just funny watching him get ratioed. That kind of made me feel good. There was a moment that I found a bit cringe that I want to talk about. Now, as you may know, I am very much in support of the European Union. I like them. I think they're great for a number of reasons. I supported Remain during the Brexit referendum. I still can't believe Brexit's a word. That's just mental. I was very much in favour of things like EEA membership. If we couldn't stay in the European Union, I was in support of a second referendum. Like, I was just pro, let's say, as close to the EU as possible. And I still am. However, we have, of course, left the European Union now. It is what it is. There is still a number of people that are very set on the fact that we will once again be part of the European Union. And I have no problem with that because I am very much in that camp as well. However, there is some absolute high cringe behaviour going on from an organisation called Best for Britain, which is a... fuck, their website is intolerable. It just is. So Best for Britain is a campaigning group. And basically their aim is sort of getting us back into the European Union. That's what it started as. And then, so according to the, oh my God, oh, their website is just, wow. They refer to themselves as internationalist patriots. Okie doke. Anyway, I mean, I agree ideologically with a lot of what they do and what they say. And I think that's great. I don't, however, agree with this. So, they've had a wonderful idea for a really great campaign, and it was tweeted about by their CEO Naomi Smith, who is also a co-host on what used to be the Romaniacs podcast and is now called Oh God, What Now? Which I suppose is a fitting name for a podcast if you're talking about British politics. So she tweeted, "We are projecting the names of everyone who misses Europe onto a landmark in Brussels on the 23rd of June, 5 years on from referendum. With a message of love and hope, you can add yours here. Please share if you can." And then she got a link to the campaign. Now, here's where my problem with this really comes in. Firstly, I don't really feel that this is a useful piece of campaigning, to be honest. I feel like, firstly, I don't really see what the point is. I mean, we can tell people in the European Union that we value them as partners and neighbours and friends without doing some weird attention-seeking thing. You know, this is not really going to change hearts and minds, because the people that are against the European Union are not going to be changed by what is frankly a middle-class pressure group projecting something on a country that they are not in. I feel like this is something that's just for them to make them feel good, and it's not going to actually change the minds of anyone to make them more to make them like the idea of being in the European Union anymore. Obviously, it's not going to make a difference to anyone currently in the European Union, because they can't do anything to bring us back in. So it just seems like it's something to make these people feel better about themselves. And I don't really think that's a worthwhile thing. They are also asking for donations for this, right? This is my other problem. They said on their website, "Campaign activity and stunts like this cost money, and we try to spend our money on direct campaigning. So please consider helping us cover the cost of this message of hope by making a donation when you add your name below." I just feel that if you want to do something to show that there is still love and affection for the European Union, for people in the rest of Europe, here in the UK, there are a lot better things that you could do than this. For example, we have seen in the news recently about EU citizens who have come to the UK and been detained by border force. We could use some of this money, if these people are really that passionate about helping people in Europe to realise that, you know, there are a lot of people here that love and care for them. That money could be used to help them, you know, with legal fees, to help them to get out of the situation that they're in. There are a number of people that are having problems with the EU settlement scheme. EU citizens who live here in the UK, have their whole lives here, and are terrified of losing their right to live and work here in the UK simply because this EU settlement scheme is so difficult to navigate. This money that they're raising could be spent on actually helping them, you know? Hire some immigration lawyers, get them to set up clinics so that they can help people with, you know, the applications, help people with appeals, things like that. That would be a more useful direction to put these funds in, rather than some projection that's going to make a couple of people feel better about themselves for a couple of minutes, but doesn't really have an effect anywhere else. I just, if I was running a pro-European Union organisation in the UK, I feel like a better use of funding would be helping people from the European Union who are in danger and need support and help, rather than projecting shit on buildings for attention or whatever. I don't know, man. That's just me. It just... my God. It just seems like that kind of very cringe type of activism that middle class people do, and they feel like they're helping, but really they're not. They're not doing anything useful. They're not doing anything of value. They're just making themselves and their friends feel better. And it's just like, this is kind of embarrassing, but okay. Work. So what else has been going on? There was a lot of discourse about what older people want politically. And there was a lot of people on the left who were basically like, they want to hurt the young. They want to kill the young. They hate us. I do not agree with that. Personally. I spend a lot of time with old people. Most of my romantic partners are old. No. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm biased. I just feel like writing off entire age groups of people and saying that like they're evil and they hate all of us is not helpful. I mean, there are lots of older people who just want, you know, things like access to social care. They want their pensions at a reasonable time, and they want for people to have good lives, like everybody, not just themselves. So while I understand some people are frustrated, I think that attacking older people is not helpful, and it's not going to help to bring the left any closer to any kind of political power. But, you know, are they actually going to think about that? Probably not. They're just going to, you know, keep being mad and never try and reach out. I mean, you never know. There could be tons of elderly lefties that you're just isolating there, but okay. There was a an interesting bit of news about the royal family. So the Buckingham Palace apparently banned coloured immigrants or foreigners from serving in clerical roles in the royal household until at least the late 1960s. And the royal family, Buckingham Palace, apparently negotiated controversial clauses that remain in place to this day, exempting the Queen and her household from laws that prevent race and sex discrimination. Interesting. Well. I'm sure it wasn't a coincidence that it was announced this week, really randomly, that we were getting, I think it's a 4-day bank holiday next year for the Queen's Jubilee. It's interesting that they announced that right around the time that The Guardian reported that, you know, Buckingham Palace was a very blatantly racist employer. So that's interesting. I mean, I'm still going to take my fucking bank holiday, but like, I'm side-eyeing that family once again. oh dear. James Cleverly, the MP for Braintree and the Minister for Middle East and North Africa in the Foreign, Commonwealth and Development Office, tweeted this week about funding for schools and things. So he said, while I'm at it, why relegate art, music and PE to a non-serious status? Implying maths is work, art is play is toxic for both. Art is important and fun. Maths is important and fun. He was responding to an interview that Kate Green, who is the Shadow Education Secretary, gave, where she talked about keeping schools open for longer was potentially a bad idea. One of the government's big plans to help kids catch up on the education that they may have missed during lockdown is to have schools be open for longer. And she talked about how she feels it's not very helpful to have kids doing, you know, heavy duty educational things like maths at 5 or 6 in the evening. I wouldn't want to do maths anytime, to be honest, but I do see what James Cleverly is trying to say, if I'm honest. I don't think it's fair to say that one school subject is more serious than the other. I don't think it's fair to say that artistic subjects should just be, you know, after school activities and things like that. I think that it's important that the arts has a presence throughout the curriculum, because I think it is, it's important, you know, society needs culture to function, let's be real. And also the arts will teach you lots of different skills. When I was at school, I did very well in English, and I do think that that is because I did lots of drama. So I, you know, I did drama as a GCSE, and throughout the first few years of secondary school, I, you know, I did lots of extracurricular drama activities as well, and that helped me a lot with English, because I had a greater understanding of text, because I was also learning about that in drama as well. So that was, you know, a transferable skill. There is lots of things you can learn in music and dance, you know, art, you know, the painting one, all that kind of stuff teaches you stuff that you can then carry on to other subjects. So I think that art should, you know, creative subjects definitely have a place in the curriculum and should be taken seriously and not just treated as, you know, some nonsense subject that isn't important. However, a Conservative MP saying this is very fucking cute, because it's his party and the government he serves in that is relegating the arts to not being serious subjects. It's his government that is proposing cutting funding to art subjects. So if he really believes this, he needs to go have a little chat with the education secretary and tell him how he feels. Because he's right. He's making points. The arts are worthwhile, serious subjects. So James, put your money where your damn mouth is and go have a little chat with Gavin Williamson and tell him that. Tell him from me. Just, I mean, you know, neither of you are going to know who I am, but like, just do it, bro. Stand up for the arts. Don't just do it on Twitter. Do it everywhere. Do it in your real life. Do it. Anyways. Oh, that made me sad. Sorry, I just saw another tweet about how Holby City got cancelled and now I'm depressed again. I'm gonna miss you, Holby City. Love you. So speaking of Gavin Williamson, he did an interview, and they were asking him, did he agree with extending the school day? He kind of did not give an answer at any point, which is not helpful. The frustrating thing is that teachers who interact with students on a regular basis and have done throughout the pandemic as well, there is this myth that teachers just stopped working because the physical it doesn't matter, it's fine. I'm a writer, I can basically just retcon the English language. So because schools were physically closed, a lot of people had this idea that teachers were just sat at home for several months doing nothing. But that wasn't true. A number of teachers were still involved in online learning. There were also a number of teachers still at school because schools were still open for the children of key workers and for vulnerable kids. So actually, teachers didn't get a massively long break. They didn't really get any break at all. They were probably working more than they were before the pandemic. So teachers interact with kids every day. They know kids' learning styles. They know the potential that children have. They know how to support those kids to achieve their educational goals. Certainly more than some guy sat in a Westminster office who doesn't actually interact with these kids at all. Their parents as well will know better about what is right for their kids. So if you have parents and teachers coming together to tell you extending the school's day is not going to help these kids, then maybe, just maybe, the education secretary should listen. But does he? No. Also, I was annoyed because Frank Spencer trended for hours because Gavin Williamson was on TV. And I just want to say again that Gavin Williamson is not Frank Spencer, because Frank Spencer is a good fucking man and he tries his best and he's a wonderful person, and I will not take this slander anymore. Keir Starmer was on TV. He was interviewed by Piers Morgan for Piers Morgan's Life Stories. Ooh, interesting. So there was a moment in particular I want to talk about where Keir Starmer talked about his parents, and he talked about in particular his mother's death, and it was really sad. He quite obviously got very emotional talking about the subject. And there are some people who are attacking him for that. And they think he shouldn't have talked about it and he shouldn't have shown that emotion on TV. And I find that a little frustrating, because someone being in the public eye and someone being a political leader, I don't think that that should mean that they aren't allowed to show emotion. We see this a lot, particularly with female leaders as well. I remember when Nicola Sturgeon, she talked about having a miscarriage, and because she was raising awareness of that. And there are a lot of people that use that to attack her, and they said that she shouldn't be a leader because, you know, she was talking about this and she was emotional. And I was like, do you want leaders that are robots? Like, for real? Are you serious? Like, what? There are a lot of people that attacked Theresa May when she would talk about emotional things. I don't like Theresa May, as you'll know. But I don't dislike her because she's an emotional person or because she shows vulnerability. I you know, that's not what my beef is with her. My beef with Theresa May is that she was a terrible prime minister who showed very little compassion to people. That's my problem with her. But you look at somebody like Nicola Sturgeon, who is an incredibly successful leader. Not just in the fact that she keeps winning elections, but in the fact that she's able to make meaningful changes in people's lives. A number of policies that have been brought in by her government have made real and meaningful changes. Extra welfare payments to people, that is making real changes in people's lives. Infrastructure projects that are improving lives, creating jobs. She's been able to do that. But then you have people say, because she shows emotion when she talks about something, number one, that is incredibly upsetting and traumatic, so of course she's going to be emotional. And number two, that many people have gone through. So I don't really understand why she's expected to just be completely stoic while talking about something like that. And I feel that the same thing should be extended to Keir Starmer. He's talking about something incredibly traumatic that a lot of people can relate to Why are we expecting him not to be upset? Why are we expecting him not to cry? If Keir Starmer wants to cry while he talks about the death of his mother, let the man cry. Let the man fucking cry his heart out. I don't care if he's on TV. I don't care if he's at the Labour Party conference. Whatever. If he needs to cry while he talks about this moment of grief, that is fine with me. Because I would rather that a country is led by somebody who isn't afraid of being a person, isn't afraid of being a human. This is one of my major problems with Boris Johnson. Everything with him is an act. I don't think we will ever know who Boris Johnson is as a person, because everything he does is so carefully calculated. It is planned. It is rehearsed. It is performed. Everything he says, everything he does, the way he messes up his hair, the way he delivers everything he says, the way he walks, the way he looks at people, everything about that man is a performance. None of it is real. Absolutely none of it. So I would rather that I can see a person. You know, if we have a prime minister that cries when he talks about the death of his parents, that's real. I can see it. There are going to be people that look at that and they say, I understand you completely. I feel it. I relate. I've been there. And surely that's better than somebody who has spent just their whole life putting on this show, never been real, never been honest, never torn down the walls and showed who they really are. I have no problem with political leaders being vulnerable, and I just wanted to fucking talk about it. Liz Truss, she is the Trade Secretary and the Minister for Women and Equalities. She had the audacity, you guys. She tweeted, Happy Pride Month. We want everyone to be able to live their life free from prejudice. So we are banning conversion therapy, hosting the first LGBT international conference, reducing the cost of applying for a gender recognition certificate. Hashtag Pride Month 2021. Okay. Well, sis. Well, Miss Thing. Let's talk about some other things. Firstly, this government have promised... Look, the Conservatives have been in power for a very fucking long time, and they keep promising they're going to ban conversion therapy, and they have yet to do it. So I don't believe them this time either. I don't think they're going to do it. I really, really don't. Liz Truss has also played a part in slowing down the progress for reform to the Gender Recognition Act. Making a gender recognition certificate cheaper does not fix a lot of the problems that trans people are facing, such as huge delays for treatment. There are 5-year waiting lists, sometimes even longer. It is such a struggle for trans people to actually get any kind of help or support with transitioning. And currently, as far as I know, I think to get a gender recognition certificate, you have to have been seen by a medical professional. So making it a bit cheaper to get the certificate isn't helpful if it still takes several years for someone to fulfill one of the criteria to actually get that certificate. But okay, girl. The LGBT action plan was scrapped by her department. They, of course, are leaving open the loophole for religious conversion therapy. So conversion therapy isn't even getting banned, even if they said they're going to do it. It's just, it's the audacity for me. The LGBT advisory panel was disbanded by her department. Her department are advising the government to withdraw from diversity programs. I mean, you know, it's just, it's the audacity, really, for me. You know, it's like, you know, everyone says about how June comes around and everyone's suddenly, like, really into Pride Month. But it's like, what are you going to do for the rest of the fucking month, bitch? What are you going to do? I do not request or desire your thoughts and criticisms on the garden you do not have permission or the inclination to visit. Remember where you came from, dear dismal simple boy, and remember that the pride and joy that resides in your pants is nothing to write home about either. Please do not mistake your lack of attraction to me for permission to traipse out the same misogynistic tropes found in magazines in the mouths of straight men, because tasteless, tacky jokes about how disgusting vaginas are does nothing to help your lack of personality. Really wanted to like Drag Race Down Under, but like a lot of people that I've spoken to and seen talking about it, we're having problems. I mean, I was excited because, you know, oh, it's gonna be great, and you know, you get to see how things are over in Australia and New Zealand, and it's exciting. Firstly, my favourite got sent home in the first week, even though I actually thought that she did a really great job, which was fucked up. I feel like the judging has been suspicious. And then one of the recent episodes, oh my god. Firstly, one of the contestants, actually it's more than one, because there's actually quite a few issues with racism on this season, but the one of the more egregious examples, the racist things that the contestant has done were brought up on the show. And then on the main stage, RuPaul was basically like, he started rambling about fucking cancel culture or some shit and was like, well, never mind. And I was like, right. I mean, here's the thing. What this person had actually done was actually against Indigenous Australians. So I don't think it's really RuPaul's place to be like, well, it's fine. But I mean, she did anyway. So that was uncomfortable. And in that same episode, there was repeated constant jokes from so many people about how gross and disgusting vaginas are, and I just thought to myself, I don't fucking want to watch this show. I'm tired. I don't want to watch the rest of this season. I don't really care who wins at this point because all my favourites have gone home and I'm bored and I don't want to do this anymore. As somebody who's been around the LGBT community a long time, even before I was open about my own sexual orientation, I have heard this shit a bazillion fucking times and I'm so bored and I'm so tired of it. I feel like there is this attitude from some gay men, of course it's not all of them, but it is a significant number, who for some reason seem to think that because they're not attracted to women, they can act however they want towards women. You know, that includes, you know, touching women without consent. That's just weird. Why are you doing that? Why are you grabbing my boobs? I don't care if you're gay. Get the fuck off them. Like, where's that? That's happened a number of times, and it's like, what kind of sex offender shit is this? Just because you're not attracted to me, that doesn't mean you get to touch parts of me that are private and none of your fucking business. What? Of course, the whole vagina thing. I swear to you, there are some gay men and they make, like, hating and being disgusted by vaginas their entire personality. And it's sad. Of course, this doesn't just affect women. This also affects trans men. You know, who are also essentially attacked with this. And it, look, nobody is saying that you have to look at one or touch one or do anything with one. Frankly, many of them probably aren't interested in you. But if you could just stop repeating this whole tired shit about how a body part that actually quite a lot of people have is disgusting and gross, that'd be really nice. Because from pretty much the time that we're born until the time that we die, we are taught to hate it. You know, it's disgusting, it's unsanitary, it bleeds sometimes, it's so gross, oh my god. You know, we're sold creams and tablets and things to put in it to make it better and more palatable, you know, and we're sold this unrealistic image from magazines and porn-addled weirdos, and we're told that, you know, it has to look a certain way and it has to fucking smell like freshly cut grass and taste like a strawberry milkshake, and you know, it has to look perfect and all this. And we get enough of that from the rest of the world. So here's another Pride Must Wish that I'm making this year. Could cisgender gay men just fucking stop? I promise you, my vagina's not interested in you either. But she'd like you to just stop being a twat for like 5 minutes and stop making her feel bad, right? She already feels bad enough. She's just trying to live her life. Leave her alone. You know? I don't know. It was just really off-putting, you know, watching the show and just hearing this shit. And it's like, most of these boys haven't even seen a vagina since they were born. How do they even know what they look like or what they, you know, fucking feel like or whatever? It's like, they sound like incels. It's really weird. You know how incels, and they talk about women like we're these just like disgusting things. They do that, and it sounds like that. And I feel grossed out by it, if I'm honest. But yeah, so it's just a little plea from the women of the LGBT community to the men, just to say, hey, could you maybe like not join in with everybody else's quest to make us feel terrible about our bodies, please? Like, we're just trying to live, man. We're just trying to live.
Thank you for listening to Sincerely Jennifer with me, Jennifer Wan. If you want to find more of my work, you can on my website, jenniferwan.com, or you can find me on social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Reddit, SoundCloud, and pretty much every social media website ever, with the username Miss J Squared. Thank you to my amazing top tier patron supporters, Amanda, Kylie,